thank you so much for joining me today on another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, PRNcom.net, the first place to head for the best information on natural interventions for yourself, your family. There's all kinds of shows with tons of information here on PRN.net, and that includes Gary Nell's show as well as this one, which is The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we'd like to help those who help us bring you this show, including Nature's Answer. Nature's Answer has been providing nutraceuticals and natural remedies to families since late 1960s, actually, since been incorporated since 1972. So I want to thank you so much for joining us once again. You can always find out more by visiting our website at www.naturalnurse.com on the web. And today, we're very happy to bring aboard our guest, Dr. Meir Eisenstein. Dr. Eisenstein is both a medical doctor and an attorney, which is certainly an unusual combination. He is a graduate of the University of Illinois Medical School, the Medical College of Wisconsin School of Public Health, and the John Marshall Law School. He's been involved in medicine for 33 years and has cared for over 75,000 people. He's a board-certified physician by the National Board of Medical Examiners, American Board of Public Health and Preventive Medicine, and the American Board of Quality Assurance and Utilization Review Physicians. So he certainly is well-educated and with many years of experience. So it's almost surprising to see the kind of books he has written, including Give Birth at Home with the Home Birth Advantage, which I think is very fascinating since I myself am a nurse midwife and I've participated in hundreds of home births, as well as his newest book, which we'll be talking about today, Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Eisenstein.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. You know, I was listening to the introduction, and my oldest son said to me, Dad, when you're a young physician, you most probably try to exaggerate your experience like one of our candidates, you know, and as you get older, you under-evaluate. So he said, you've been in practice for 35 years, not 33 years. I thought that was kind of cute, you know.
Yes.
I didn't know you were a nurse midwife. Now I'm majorly impressed because one of my daughters is a midwife. In fact, she's and we've it, this all really started because of my wife Karen. We had our first baby when I was a third year medical student, and Karen wanted natural childbirth. She wanted to breastfeed, and I learned nothing about that in medical school. And we found the doctor who allegedly believed in natural childbirth, and by today's comparison, or by today's standard, it wasn't all that bad of an experience. My wife didn't have a C-section. She didn't have an epidural. But it wasn't a very good experience, you know, in the hospital. And she said, I want to...
Were you allowed in? Were you allowed in those days?
I was allowed in. It was just after the era, you know. In fact, we went to the doctor, who was the first doctor in Chicago to allow husbands in the delivery room. But it turned out he was a politician, not a believer in natural childbirth. It was a way of building his practice. And so he really didn't believe in that. In fact, it was kind of interesting when Karen said to him, well, you know, I want my husband to be there. His response was, do you really want that? She said she was blown away. She couldn't believe it. She had already switched doctors three times to try to find a doctor that would believe in natural childbirth and let her nurse the baby right after it was born. But we were very blessed because as a third-year medical student, I met Dr. Robert Mendelson, and he became the godfather to all six of my children, and he was the national medical director of Head Start before he got fired because he made the comment that disadvantaged children because of economic background had to have Head Start through high school, not through preschool, in order to really catch up with the rest of the population, at least as far as education went. And they fired him over that. And he came to the University of Illinois, and I was very privileged to study with him and study with him until he passed away for the next 20 years. And so he was the one who introduced the maverick idea of medicine. And he's the one who told me 35 years ago, 40 years ago, that he gave up on vaccines. And so you know what all my six children and nine grandchildren, what their vaccine status is.
Well, I'll tell you, my own children who are 33 and 30 have never been vaccinated.
Boy, you must have been listening to Dr. Mendelsohn.
Well, actually, I've been doing holistic medicine since 1964.
Wow.
And then, when I read and evaluated the research that was linked to both the safety and efficacy of vaccination, I decided to hold off. And I said if I would vaccinate them, it would be one vaccine at a time when they were older. I felt that was a much more prudent intervention protocol.
It surely makes sense, you know. I mean, my life has been easy as far as that goes, at least until the last couple of years, because I never made a big issue of one way or the other, and the way I conducted my family life was my own personal business, you know. But then it more than a couple of years ago, about 10 years ago, it became blatantly obvious that. So much of the neurological problems and the problems of asthma that we're seeing in our society is most probably caused by some type of medical intervention.
Why did you think that, Dr. Eisenstein? Now, obviously, you're a well-educated in conventional medicine. Why did that become obvious to you?
Well, you know, my partner's
died. Doesn't seem to be obvious to everyone else.
Well, let me tell you, I asked myself the same question, you know. But it's kind of fascinating because, you know, my practice has mainly been, I have six partners. We've been delivering babies at home for 35 years. And I never expected to really stay in medicine. I assumed that I would venture to something else.
Well, you're an attorney as well. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, but that's only been the last 10 years, and I'm an attorney as far as helping families with vaccine issues and healthcare issues. Yeah, I really don't really practice law, you know. I practice it, but I consider myself a physician and not an attorney from the standpoint of how I support my family. And I find it very, very fascinating because I did not care for medical school until I met Dr. Mendelsohn. I loved law school, but I thank God every day that I'm a physician because I just enjoy helping families every day in medicine. And law is, sad to say, almost only about money. I mean, that's all it's about. Unless you end up in some type of work where you're helping someone. I think the vaccine issue has been just really rewarding in law because I've helped thousands and thousands of families to not vaccinate their children using right now. The latest method is religious exemption, which fits well within the American law.
Right. Now, you have to, I've told many of my patients, if they want to make their life a little easier, to join the Christian Science Church. You know, they don't have to give up whatever their own.
Boy, are you on point? Oh, I know. I was on Hannity and Combs about 2 years ago. I was on with one of the former surgeon generals, and she was just belittling parents who did not vaccinate their children, calling them child abusers.
Oh, they do that. Yes, I know. People can be, the kids can be taken away for parental negligence. They have all kinds of problems.
Yeah, exactly. So I asked the Surgeon General, I said, Madam Surgeon General, I just have one question to ask. What's if those parents happen to be Christian scientists? And she said, oh, no, that's not a problem at all. So I said, you know, as soon as the show is over, I'm going to call every single family who's ever come to me, tell them to become a Christian scientist, because obviously they pray to a more powerful God than I do, being Jewish. I mean, my God allows vaccines, and their God protects them even if they don't get vaccines. So, you know, she was stunned. She didn't know how to answer the question, you know. And that's because Because the bottom line, this is a great country. I mean, the idea of religious freedom and freedom of speech are most probably the two most powerful doctrines that separate this country from every other country in the world.
Yes, I agree. But isn't it a shame that we have to, you know, basically play this kind of game? Why wouldn't parents be protected in terms of choice?
Because in this country, the only time we believe in choice is if you want to abort an unborn baby. Then they believe in choice.
Well, not for long if the wrong party gets in.
Not the wrong party. You know, and then let's not talk politics. I have very, very strong beliefs that abortion has led to all the problems in our society, and I'm not justifying it right or wrong. You know, but the rule of thumb in any society, when you don't protect the weakest element of your society, the whole society pays the price. And it's interesting, kind of, the left understands a little bit, the right understands a little bit, but they don't get the whole concept. I mean, to quote Barack Obama, they just don't get it. You know, but I don't think he gets it or McCain gets it. And the problem is most probably the Libertarian Party is the only one that gets it, you know, that you can't go after a weak segment of our society. And that's a serious problem. And that's the same. It's the same issue with home birth. It's the same issue with vaccines.
Do you think vaccines are ever useful?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's what
that's
I believe.
Exactly how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me my gut feeling, no. I mean, I don't think they're ever valuable because, you know, it's been an unsubstantiated theory, kind of like the germ theory of disease, you know, an unsubstantiated theory which has great implications financially for explaining things which don't explain things. I mean, if the germ theory of disease fit, how come if you put someone with the flu in the room with 10 people, all 10 people won't get it? So obviously there's something more going on than just this germ theory of disease, you know, I think that's the whole concept of we bought into Pasteur because, he fit well within a model. We like black and white models in this country. You know, hospital birth is safe, home birth is dangerous. Vaccines are safe, not vaccine is dangerous. Antibiotics are good, alternative medicine is bad. I mean, that's kind of Americans' thinking, you know, black and white, you know. That's a theory that works has to work across the board. Maybe the most sad part of our society has been the damage we're seeing from vaccines, which is almost, in a sense, irrefutable when you look at unvaccinated populations. Their incidence of asthma are virtually non-existent. We've got now well over, 25 or 30,000 children that we've taken care of, virtually none of them vaccinated. Our asthma rates almost don't exist.
Exactly. So I see that too.
Yeah, and let's not even talk about autism, you know, which of course I will talk about. And I've got real good documentation here for this because, any one doctor, any one nurse midwife can say that. And the question is, how do you know they're telling the truth? How do you know they have, even if they think they're telling the truth, possibly those children with asthma or autism just have left their practices and they don't really have follow-up on them. But I'm also the medical director for the alternative medicine Blue Cross HMO here in Chicago. And we have about 2,000 members and almost 1,000 children. And the asthma rate in Chicago in the HMO is approximately 12%. And our asthma rate in the HMO has been less than 1%. I mean, it's
amazing.
And I tell you what's fascinating, because there you know you have control of the population. But even better, I love what Blue Cross defines as asthma, because you could also just define it poorly. So one doctor defines it one way, one midwife defines it another way. But they define it as two emergency room visits for any respiratory type illness in 1 year, or one hospitalization for any type of respiratory illness in 1 year. A very, you know, it may not be the perfect definition, but at least it's quantifiable. And so I got a call from the head of Blue Cross, one of the head medical directors, and they want to know how can we have such a low rate in our practice. And I wasn't afraid, but I decided to play with her a little bit. She happens to be a pediatrician. And I said, do you want the truth or do you want a made-up story? So I said, I want the truth. I said, well, I'll give you a made-up story first. I have the most phenomenal doctors who know how to take care of people and not develop asthma. And so she said, well, can you give us the secret? I said, now I'll give you the secret. Tell them not to vaccinate. You know, and she was just, she couldn't believe it. She almost slammed the phone down in my face because, you know, I mean, this is the backbone of every pediatric practice is vaccinate before you educate, you know. And she just couldn't even believe it. It was like, it was such heresy, and it bothered her so greatly that she just couldn't even fathom that that was a reality. I think that's the sad part of today, that we have the most brilliant part of our society, nurses, nurse practitioner, physicians, I'm going to leave chiropractors out of that mix because, you know, they're pretty much against vaccines no matter what, who haven't applied their brilliance that they've had in grammar school, high school, college, and professional school to just researching it, just like you did. You know, that's the sad part.
Well, it is very sad, and it seems to me that it's an outrageous number. We're actually seeing ads on television right now saying 1 out of 150 children have autism.
Yeah, very frightening.
Isn't that a little shocking?
Yeah, well, you know, somehow that's why you have to have studies like came out a couple days ago. The one said that there is no link between autism and
Oh, did another one come out? They keep putting those out, and then the reverse comes out as well.
Right. Well, this is one that said we're going to finally put this issue to rest, you know. And this was the funniest thing is it's kind of like what happened in the Poland case, the one of the little girl who has autism, that they finally admitted that it was because of vaccines, but they said she had something called a mitochondrial disorder. And boy, did they make a mistake there. You know, the one thing law school taught me very well, never open your mouth in a courtroom unless you 100% know what the answer is. And what they did is, you know, they've got now over 7,000 cases of parents who filed claims against the government, you know, for mercury in vaccines causing autism. And they thought that they can quiet all these cases by showing that this little girl had a rare genetic disorder that's 1 in 85,000 called a mitochondrial disorder. And I didn't even really know what a mitochondrial disorder was when they brought it up.
Well, if you don't know, I don't think anyone else did.
Well, I mean, it's something I remember from high school biology. These are the power cells in the mitochondria, these little power cells in your cells that give you energy, but I have to go back and look it up, you know. And actually, interesting enough, it falls part of Jerry Lewis's, he's gobbled up all these esoteric type of muscular type of diseases. And so that's why they say she developed autism, and she got 9 individual different vaccines in one day. But what was so fascinating was many of the autism researchers started doing testing on autistic children. They found between 22 and 25% of children with autism have mitochondrial disorder. Well, that's mind-boggling because it's 1 in 85,000. We're talking about something that's virtually not insignificant, but so rare that there's no way that you're going to find 200,000 or 300,000, just autistic children that have it. And I think they gave one of the clues. I think children who have a propensity to damaged mitochondria, their mitochondria becoming damaged and therefore developing all these neurological problems, can't handle vaccines. And it explains why some children who get vaccines, nothing happens to them, at least nothing overtly, and some of them develop almost immediately some very serious type of neurological problems. And I think this is it's not a question of the answer, but it explains why, what happens in a sense. You know, the vaccine actually damaged the mitochondria, and once damaged, they can't be really repaired. But all the treatments, all the biomedical treatments that all the wonderful alternative medicine doctors and nurse practitioners are using for autism, they can... it's kind of like if you have a bad battery, it kind of gives a little bit of juice to the battery, but you never fix the bad battery. And all their treatments really are aimed, when you look at it, at repairing the mitochondria.
Yeah, so that's true. As we know, in all applications, in terms of looking at the natural development of the body, we know that when someone has any kind of weakness, even what you pointed out with the cold or flu, not everybody gets it, although perhaps there is some kind of organism there, but it depends on the person's strength or weakness whether they'll be able to fight it off. So we always look at supporting the immune system.
Exactly. This goes against the germ theory of disease, because the germ theory of disease essentially says that a germ, bacteria or virus, when attacks, will create these problems. It doesn't accept the concept of an immune system or being able to boost your immune system in order to not get the disease.
Right. And you know, if you look at the research that's sort of pre the drug days, like Dr. Enderlin and his interesting analysis of the pleomorphic form of microorganisms and what makes them change into one form or another, which, of course, everyone can understand if they look at a butterfly. You know, many things have pleomorphic forms. And according to the milieu, whatever that particular microorganism is in, it could be sort of put into a non-invasive form, or it can become a very pathogenic organism. And there's no addressing that in mainstream medicine.
Exactly, exactly. You know, they kind of talk about it with diet and exercise. They kind of talk about that, but those are kind of buzzwords, or like I like the politicians use talking points, you know, and so they have nothing to do with reality. It's a litany of things they say. You have high blood pressure. Well, I want you to look, watch your diet and exercise, and that goes real quickly to take drugs. I mean, that's the real venue, in a sense, of allopathic medicine. Pretty sad.
Well, I want to tell our listeners that getting a copy of this book, I think it's something that every parent should have, and certainly parents-to-be. And it's called Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate by Dr. Meir Eisenstein, who is our guest today. MD, JD, and MPH. What's an MPH, doctor?
MPH is a master's in public health. I went to the Medical College of Wisconsin. It's the branch of medicine where you look at population statistics rather than individual patients. So a practitioner, be it a nurse practitioner, a physician, a chiropractor, they'll base their knowledge and experience on what they've read and also their individual patients. A public health doctor looks at a city, at a country, and sees what effects it has on the country. So looking at, like, for example, autism, a public health figure is 1 in 150 children have autism. That would be a public health way of looking at it, because any one individual practitioner may only see 3, 4, or 5, and it could be random a chance that they have those children in their practice. But if you look at the general population, that's where you can really see what's happening. And really looking, it's kind of like they always say in medicine or in logic, you don't want to base your decision on one individual person, and we're really looking at a public health as a means of implementing different treatment plans for a population.
Well, when we look at that number, which is skyrocketing in terms of children, as you said, not only with asthma and autism, what is the thought in conventional medicine about why these things have escalated in such a short period of time?
Well, I can tell you that, I'll quote the American Academy of Pediatrics, we have no clue what causes autism except it's not vaccines. I find that very,
really?
That's their statement. That's their public statement, which I find very fascinating. You know, that, you know, it somehow defies logic. When someone can make that statement, you know, you can't make the statement, we have no clue, but. And you, minimally, you'd have to say, we have some clue. We know it's not vaccines. But you can't say we have no clue and then say it's not vaccines. I mean, there's such a, I'm trying to think of the right word. There's such a bias that these injections are so valuable that no matter what evidence you'd produce, they would say it's not true. And one of the strongest bits of evidence when you take a look at the public health literature is you look at diseases like tuberculosis. Why did that disappear without vaccines in this country? Rocky Mountain spotted fever, cholera, scarlet fever, tularemia, plague. Why did they disappear without vaccines? You know, when you take a look at the graphs from the Center for Disease Control at polio, measles, mumps, it doesn't make a difference what you look at. The death rate was dropping precipitously way before the introduction of vaccines. And the introduction of vaccines did not alter the dynamics. It didn't cause a precipitous drop in death rate from the illness. And so, in fact, it looks no different, the curve for measles, mumps, rubella, than it does for tuberculosis. And so really the burden of proof is, show me how these vaccines have done anything of any value. You know, they say, well, there'd be epidemics breaking out, we'd have millions of people dying in the streets, and then they use words like herd immunity as if we're all cattle. And I find it fascinating they use the word herd immunity, which does not apply to killed vaccines. So today, the injectable polio vaccine, which is a killed vaccine, does not cause herd immunity, which is a concept which does not work for artificial viruses which are injected into the body. It's worked very well for natural diseases that occur. Pertussis, whooping cough, hepatitis B, which is a sexually transmitted disease, there's no such thing as herd immunity. The concept is that if a certain percentage of the population gets an illness, it'll be protective because they'll pass on the antibodies to the rest of the population. But they've kind of passed it off and left out five of the vaccines which are required in virtually every state as having nothing to do with herd immunity.
It's just fascinating. What do you think are some of the, you know, political issues or perhaps money-based issues that is driving this kind of madness to giving newborns such an incredible array of vaccinations right at birth and within the first few months of life?
Well, you know, I testified frequently in front of the Illinois Department of Public Health, and I look at the politicians there who have no clue what any of the arguments are for or against. How can they? They're lawyers mainly. They aren't doctors. And all they can see is if I came out with a position against vaccines and one child dies from an infectious disease that allegedly could have been prevented, my political career can be over. But if 1,000 children die from giving these vaccines, but I'm going along with the majority, I have protection in a sense. And so, you know, they aren't thinking one way or the other of the science. These aren't scientists. Politicians only have one job, to get elected. And until the population realizes that, they'll start thinking that there's different choices between the politicians. There are no different choices. They'll all do the same thing. It's just a matter of what it takes to get elected, you know. I'll vote for the first politician that says, I am shocked at the high rate of autism, and I will not rest until I find out what it is, including looking at if vaccines cause autism. Do you think anyone will take a risk like that? No one would take that risk, you know. Obama, the candidate of change, won't take that risk, and McCain, the maverick, won't take that risk, you know. And we should not support any politician, any of us who are in the healthcare field, who will not absolutely stand up and say, this is criminal what's going on. 1.5 million children suffering from the worst disease I have seen in my whole lifetime. and they're all keeping quiet about it. I mean, this is, you know, let's get some more health care by both politicians so we can give more autism to more children.
It's just an amazing situation. We're going to take just a two-minute break right here, Dr. Eisenstein, and when we come back, I would love to reintroduce you and the fabulous books, movies, radio shows, all the things you're doing so that people can make an educated choice. We will be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Z, and we bring you lots of radio shows, including The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, Natural Alternatives, which is on 90.1 FM and simulcast at WUSB.FM, and Herbally Yours, which is on 90.3 FM in the New York area. And you can always find out more by visiting www.naturalnurse.com, where we have many of the books we've written posted, lectures that go on just about every day of the week all over the country, and, of course, radio and television shows, as well as YouTube presentations where you can learn more about natural alternatives. And we'd like to thank Nature's Answer. Nature's Answer has been providing herbs, nutritional supplements for many, many decades, since 1972. So none of us here have just jumped on the bandwagon of natural medicine, and certainly that is true about today's guest, Dr. Meir Eisenstein. I'm just really surprised that I haven't come across you before, Dr. Eisenstein, because, you know, we've both been in this field a very long time, and you have a long and incredible record of really looking at the natural way to healthcare, and you must have a strong conviction that that is the first option, because you even talk about things like irritable bowel syndrome, GERD, heartburn, acid reflux. Now, all these things are usually treated with drugs in conventional medicine, but, you know, I think you must have other ideas about how to best address these issues. Today, of course, we're talking about your newest book. I guess it's your newest book, unless you've snuck another out.
I am working on a book on mitochondrial disorders. The trouble is, it's so complex that I can't even understand it as I'm writing it. this is my latest book. You know, it's Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate. And by the way, if any of the listeners want, I have tons of articles, you know, on our website, homefirst.com. That's H-O-M-E-F-I-R-S-T.com. And I suppose, you know, it's the reason we haven't come across, because, you know, we had kind of a small practice. When I say small, we delivered over 20,000 babies at home, but small in the sense that we were in Chicago, never made a lot of waves, and it's only been the last couple of years that the vaccine stuff has kind of rocketed to the front. I never thought this would happen. I really thought that home birth would grab on a whole lot more than vaccines, but it's kind of fascinating. Our whole society is still mostly fear motivates our society more than anything else, and the fear of having the baby at home overwhelms that of or the alleged safety of the hospital somehow has kept people from having babies at home. But the fear of having an autistic child has really caused millions and millions of American mothers and fathers to question giving vaccines to their children.
Yeah, and it is certainly getting publicity, but I guess that, I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but some girl who's a well-known star who has an autistic child, and she's
doing Jenny McCarthy.
Yes.
And let me tell you something. I'm such a fan, I can't tell you. I met her about 8 months ago, and she is, if she's not genuine, she's the best actress I've ever seen in my life. She spoke at one of the autism conferences that I was at, and she signed books for over 4 hours, you know, and gave every penny of the proceeds to the different autism organizations. Now, let me tell you something. That is, anyone just sit there and try to just write your name for 4 hours. And not only did she write her name, she gave every single person who stood in line a little bit of a personal thank you. It was just, I couldn't get over the sincerity. You know, it's just like, it could, for her to donate that money out of her earnings would have been nothing. She could have done that. And it was the idea of taking the time, because she said, spending time with each person is the only way we can really invigorate the population.
It's just great. And, of course, what she's showing is that she used natural remedies on her own child.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. She used the, you know, the gluten-free, casein-free diet, as which I think is the number one treatment, you know, for not only autism, most probably everybody, but truly for autism. And she was using a lot of the biomedical natural interventions, you know. Very impressive, very, very impressive. Still doesn't no one should think this cures the problem, because when you have a damaged mitochondria, you'll never cure it, but you may be able to make it good enough to just function, and just frightening. I mean, just absolutely frightening. I just can't get over this. I never envisioned that vaccines would be that damaging. I mean, I really never, it never entered my mind. You know, I just knew when Dr. Mendelsohn told me 40 years ago, this is a bad idea, that was good enough for me. Here's someone.
So if you obviously do home deliveries, so women must come into your office for pre-birth counseling and, you know, their well baby visits and all that. So is it during that time that you suggest to them that they learn more about vaccinations, and then you give them the choice of having them or not? How do you manage that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of, I've said in 35 years of practice, I don't think I've ever talked someone in or talked someone out of vaccines. The majority of women who come to us start off with, I want to have my baby at home, I want to nurse my babies, I don't want to give routine antibiotics or drugs, and I don't want to vaccinate my children. I mean, that's the mindset. But it's kind of interesting, because if you look back at our practice about 10 years ago, where I wasn't as vocal about this, about 50% gave some of the vaccines. We never gave all the vaccines. And right now, it's less than 5% of families who come to us who opt for giving any vaccines.
Because they're actually looking for that.
And the numbers are growing. I mean, the sad part about it is, you know, I was expecting that we would have so many people having babies at home with us, we couldn't handle it. And we also have 2 nurse midwives who work with us and 4 obstetrical nurses. But it's turning out that the biggest part of our practice now is people who don't want to give vaccines but still aren't convinced that having the baby at home is the best option. And that's stressing me a lot, because they're still missing the ultimate starting point. And I tell you why, because if you're an Rh negative mother and you think that you're avoiding mercury, one of the clear toxins, you should realize that Rogam still has mercury in it. And now there's some talk that the epidural medication has mercury in it. These are frightening type stuff. I mean, mercury is a preservative, a thimerosal. It's a poor preservative, you know, but for some reason it's put into all these different preparations.
Yeah, I know. And I did have a home birth midwife on the show recently, and she did a wonderful job looking at the science behind the increased safety of home birth in terms of, you know, newborn survival and other statistics. That was amazing.
Well, you know, all you have to do is look at the cesarean section rate. There was a great study done about 10 years ago where it was a study about the dangers of routine C-section for twins, which is now absolutely routine in this country. And it was one of the British journals, and the head of obstetrics in either Ireland or Great Britain commented on it, and they expected him to give a glowing report how wonderful this is or how not wonderful it was. And he really just nailed it very well in my mind, where he said that the test of a true obstetrician, and he was using the word loosely for anyone who delivers babies, is how high your cesarean section rate. Low cesarean section rate, high quality medical practitioner. High cesarean section rate, low quality medical practitioner. That was his answer. And I found that just fascinating because, you know, it was so the antithesis, you know. And what's happened in the 10 years subsequent to this? Well, the cesarean section rate has doubled and tripled in hospitals around the country. When I was in early practice, 15% was considered scandalous, you know, and now we're running over 30%. And when I look at all the home birth practices, when I say all, I obviously don't have a record of it, but that's my public health interest. Rarely do they have, you'll find a home birth practice that runs a cesarean section rate over 10%, and I'm just being generous because most of them really run 4 or 5%.
Well, it's very much out of control. You know, the entire, I guess we could talk about this in terms of any medical issue, you know, like the ones you talk about in your other books, even digestive problems, which are rampant and mismanaged. And, of course, a lot of times the drug therapy, although it may quell a particular symptom, actually increases the progression of the overall disease process. So what do you think, where do you think we're moving? Of course, your practice is growing and the knowledge about you is growing, so obviously there must be a groundswell of people who really don't believe anymore in conventional medicine as being the answer.
Yeah, I think that one of the problems we have is that I think we have to get active politically, and that means we have to reject candidates like McCain and reject candidates like Obama. Obama just made the statement, "I am not for selective vaccination." Here's his quote, "I believe that we'll bring back deadly diseases like polio." Now, let me tell you something. Did he go to medical school? Did he go to nurse practitioner school? I mean, this is an insult to all the practitioners who he should have said, "I don't really know the answer to that." That would have been an acceptable answer. I mean, here's the candidate of change. Give me a break. You know, he is no different than every other politician. You know, and I say that not disparagingly, but once again, his only interest is to get elected. And so the question is, how do we politically get any candidate, you know, to look at that this is one of the greatest health care issues. In fact, I do believe that autism is the number one health concern in the country today because it affects, see, if your child develops, God forbid, cancer, if your child, God forbid, develops heart disease, it doesn't end their life that minute. They may have a shorter life, but it could be a very productive life, and it's not disruptive to the family to the point that the family can't function. The 1.5 million autistic families that have an autistic child, the divorce rate now runs over 85%. It is so disruptive to the other children. And can you imagine the angst of parents when they have a child that they just can't excuse me, can't take care of, can't take them out in public, can't do anything. This is just frightening. If you have a child with cancer, you can take them out in public. If you have a child with heart disease, you can take them out in public. I mean, it's not, and, you know, this is just the most devastating thing I've ever remotely seen in my life.
Well, especially because you believe it's so preventable.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that makes it even more, you know, but for someone to make the statement that I am not for selective vaccination, I believe that will bring back deadly disease like polio, give me a break. On what basis is he saying that? See, this is where you have advisors, where you're just parroting what someone else is saying.
Right.
You know, it would be so easy to say, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse practitioner. I'm not a chiropractor. I said, I could tell you what the establishment says, but obviously they're missing the point. I mean, if he holds himself to be the candidate of change, you know, what change is he doing? You know, no change. It's all made up. You know,
well, in your book, Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate, and of course, in your expertise as a attorney as well as a physician, you have an entire section on vaccine law.
Yeah, exactly.
And it seems unfortunate that we need to, you know about that, just as parents who are interested.
You're not
in healthcare.
We have to all become lawyers, you know. But you know, I wrote in the 90s, in the late 90s, I wrote about 10,000 letters for families for medical exemptions for vaccines, and it worked quite well for about 10 years. And what inspired me to write the book was when I spoke with a public health nurse. It had to be around, I was in law school at the time, so it had to be around 2000 or something like that, or maybe a little bit earlier. And she said to me, Dr. Eisenstein, do you really believe that vaccines are dangerous? Do you really, really believe it? So I said, do you have scientific evidence to prove that? So I said, well, no, I really don't. I mean, I just, I feel that when you look at most of the studies that favor vaccines, they were all sponsored by drug companies, and all the speakers like Paul Offit, Dr. Paul Offit, are on the payroll of the drug companies. You know, it's hard to imagine that they don't have a bias. And so she said, well, that means you really don't, you're not speaking medically, you're speaking religiously. You're speaking from your heart. And I thought about what she said, and I said, you're right. And so I went to my law professors and sat and talked to them. We reviewed the laws, and the laws are very favorable because I'll give your listeners a snippet of what the law is in virtually every state, and that is you can either be a Christian Scientist like you advocated, which I thought was brilliant, and I totally agree, or you can have a personal, specific religious belief. And then you can write a letter. It doesn't have to be on church stationery. It doesn't have to be written by a rabbi, priest, or minister. It could be your personal, specific religious belief that you can believe that God doesn't intend us to give vaccines. And I outline how to write the letter and how to put it together. And I now have on my website a listing of every state and their laws. And they're almost all the same, but you can click on. So there's 18 states that's even easier because they have what's called a philosophical exemption, which means all you have to do is write a five or six I do not believe in vaccines, end of story. And that's Texas, California, New Mexico. I can't remember, but I have there on my website. You can just click on the vaccine links, and it'll have there the map, and you just click on the map. It tells you what they allow in your state.
Well, what about last year in North Carolina? There was an incident that perhaps you're familiar with where parents were lined up outside, and actually it was with, you know, guns and federal agents there, saying they had to get vaccinated because if not, their children would not be allowed in the school. And the school was insisting on this because they would not get federal aid if
That's what happens when you take guns away from the public.
This went on in a North Carolina district where many of the population was not well educated, and they were just rounded up and vaccinated. I mean, what about those kinds of incidences?
Well, let me tell you something. This is sad to say. It was an African American district attorney who was promoting this, you know, because you see, here's the sad part. He actually thought he was doing something good, because it was the majority of the families there were African American, and he thought that they just were so poorly educated that they didn't realize how valuable these vaccines were, and so he thought he was doing something good. That's the sad part. When you get good people doing bad things because they think they're helping people out. I'll give you another example, even worse. What went on in Texas with the Mormon cult, where these babies, I'm not condoning any of their practices or that, but what harm did the mothers do to the children? Most of these babies are born in the home. None of them are vaccinated. They were all healthy children. What right did the state have to separate those children from the mothers? No one accused the mothers of being child abusers, you know, but that's where the state gets carried away. And that's why, in a sense, I'm really a libertarian. I've got to believe less intervention. The last thing I want is a Barack Obama to give us more government or a McCain to give us more government. I want someone to give us less government intervention. Government does not belong in our lives. They're meant to be there in disaster situation, which, like Gustav, I thought that was phenomenally well handled. And that's America. You learn from your mistakes.
So the best scenario in terms of vaccinations would be to have a true, non-misleading statement about each, like you do in your book, each vaccination, the possible benefits and the possible risks.
Beautiful.
And then each parent could actually evaluate that and perhaps do choose which vaccinations they do want their children to get and when. Because I believe it's medically prudent, if you are going to vaccinate, to wait. I mean, does a little infant need a papillomavirus? You know, it's just getting so out of hand.
Oh, so you are so on point. That's right. You know, well, or does a newborn baby need a hepatitis B vaccine for a sexually transmitted disease? You know, you are so right. I can't even tell you. You know, but you know, our politicians are afraid. Because they're afraid that they're going to alienate a certain percentage of the population. It's only when they realize that the vaccine, the families who don't vaccinate are the most educated, have researched it the most, like yourself and my wife, and that they'll realize they're going to lose a percentage of the population. But until we don't vote for these candidates, there's no choice. There's no chance. And that's the problem. We can't get hung up on, I mean, I really believe this is the number one critical issue in this country. I'll tell you something very fascinating about this country. We get so easily swayed. When they did a poll and they asked people, are you financially okay today? 90% of the people said they were financially okay. Then they asked another question. Do you think the country is financially okay? 90% said the country is not doing okay. Isn't that fascinating how one's own perception of what goes on is so swayed by the media? And that's why, in a certain sense, I think that all the autism organizations have done a phenomenal job of bringing awareness to the public that this is a real problem. It's not made up. The financial problems in this country are made up right now. When I say made up, the majority of people have financial problems are because they over-mortgaged their house, they bought a second house, and our government should take care of the ones who didn't do that. But the bailout today, and I hate to get political, is the most absurd thing in the world, that you and I are going to pay for all those people who speculated buying second and third houses.
Oh my God, that was an awful thing on the way to the news. I said, well, where is that coming from exactly?
It's coming from both candidates. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, where is that money going to come from us?
Your pocket and my pocket. You know, I mean, I was blown away that Barack Obama, the candidate of change, was going to do something like that. I was blown away by that, you know, because he's afraid to lose votes. It's all about votes. It has nothing to do with political ideas, you know, and it's fear mongering. That's what our politicians do. It doesn't make a difference if you're the right or the left. Your number one goal is to create fear among the public so that they will do something.
Well, we're actually getting to the end of our time together, but we have other shows scheduled. You are absolutely a fascinating person. I'm so happy to make your acquaintance, albeit via radio. Perhaps we'll meet in person if you
I'm sure we will.
And things like that. And I do want to tell our listeners to visit your extremely educational website, www.homefirst.com. That's probably the easiest way. It's also going to be posted on the website with this show archived. And you can find Dr. Meir Eisenstein there. He's written many, many books. They all sound great. Give Birth at Home with the Home Advantage, Safer Medicine, Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate. That's our book for today. Unavoidably Dangerous, Medical Hazards of HRT, and Unlocking Nature's Pharmacies. You're obviously a prolific author, a wonderful proponent, I think, for the truth. So thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Well, thank you so much. I've been honored to be with you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another edition right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can check us out on the web at prncom.net. That's Progressive Radio Network. Until next time, this is Ellen Camley, The Natural Nurse, wishing you the best and hoping that you stay healthy.